Cardboard Side of the Virtual Hardwood, it's the LLC Podcast, episode number 299. Almost at the big 300, everybody. I am Andrew, with you as always. With me again this week is Derek, also known as D43 in the forums. Welcome back to the show, D.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be back on. I had a lot of fun last week, so I had my fingers crossed that you were going to have me back on. So here we go.
Oh, definitely. It's great to have people from the community on, and I thought we had a great conversation last week. A lot of fun to catch up on all those on the news. Not sure if this week's show is going to be quite as long because we have a little bit less news to talk about, but we've got some fun topics to talk about all the same. But beginning with the news, of course, the NBA Live 14 servers were shut down at the beginning of this month, and it's just been announced that the NBA Live 15 servers are going to be shut down, D, as well, as of December 1st.
Yeah, I mean, one thing is that I just recently picked up Live 15 again, and I've owned it since it came out, and I played it during its regular cycle, and I would jump back in and play it again every now and then. But recently I've been, last night and tonight, I was picking up and playing it again, and it really was a big jump in quality from Live 14. And, they did a lot over a one-year cycle. And I also realized, on Twitter that people were still playing the Ultimate Team mode and still playing the game. So while not that many people are playing it anymore because, as we know, everybody moves on to the newer titles, there were people playing it, and this did, upset a few people, especially because it was so close to the Live 14 server shutdown as well. It's like it's almost like they piled it on.
That did surprise me, actually, because I expected more of an announcement. They announced the Live 14 shutdown. I went back and looked, and it was June. So we had, a good 5 months, I guess, to get the business, to complete business in NBA Live 14 and, get everything you wanted to do in Ultimate Team. But then, less than a month's notice before the Live 15 shutdown, and again, just after the Live 14. But like you say, there's not as many people playing it anymore, so I guess it does become hard to justify the resources after a while.
Yeah, and it probably makes sense for them to shut it down. And like you said, they just don't have the players for it anymore, and it probably didn't make sense. And I'm guessing that, Live 16 will be shut down soon as well.
Yeah, there might be a few more people playing that one, because that was a little bit better received, I think. But if it does shut down like early 2020, I saw Prime speculate about that on Twitter, and I'd be inclined to agree that that's probably, it wouldn't surprise me sometime in the next 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's, the big thing is, we're moving on to a new generation of consoles, and it's, the past gen, which will be PS4 and Xbox One, will be old news soon, which is hard to believe because it feels like we just got here.
It does, yeah. I think the last half decade has really flown, and it's getting to the point where I thought the same thing. I thought, PS5 coming out and a new Xbox, and it's 6-7 years by the time they come out since the last generation. That's pretty average, really.
Yeah, I feel like it was just yesterday I was walking into, I was so excited for the release of 2K14 on Xbox One. I walked into a mall and a Microsoft store that had it on, they had it up on the big screen for people to try it out. And it was just mind-blowing how it looked and how much things had changed since last gen. And, we talk about how, people are like, last gen graphics, they're not that much worse, but there's a pretty big jump in graphics from last gen to this gen.
There has been, and one only has to look at some of the controversy surrounding WWE 2K20 and how it seems to have taken a step or two, I'll be kind, backwards graphically, and it does look very last gen. Not if you compare it, it's not as, I don't want to use the word bad, but it is still more advanced in many ways, but you can see that jump, and that was apparent. And of course the OMG trailer for 2K14 dropped, and we did say OMG, the trailer dropped and our jaws dropped, because it did look such a big step up over what we'd been seeing for 2K13 or the last gen 2K14, which we got on PC, of course. I remember playing Live 14 as well. PS4 was actually the first console I got on launch day. It was a couple of weeks later here in Australia. But actually going to a midnight launch and getting the PS4 and bringing it home and setting it all up and, and popping Live 14 in. Live 14 was the first game I played, actually, on this current gen, which wasn't the best introduction to the current generation, I might say. And you could see what they were going for, but unfortunately, it was not the comeback that we needed. 2K14. I'm not a big fan of 2K14, actually, but it was definitely a better game, and it holds up a lot better than Live 14 does. I guess there were still people playing Live 14 or just doing it for content, etc. There's always that interest, I think, in streaming old games. And I know you've also put up that content as well on your YouTube channel and such. Because it is interesting to look back at games. People rail against nostalgia, but at the same time, it's a point of interest.
No, it absolutely is. And, you know, to make a point about, you know, Live 14, they didn't come out strong, but I want to reiterate how big of a jump they made in just 1 year's cycle. To Live 15.
Yeah,
I think that gameplay was almost completely overhauled and did create a better experience for the the consumers. And you know, people are commenting. I've been posting a couple gameplay clips on Twitter recently, and people are commenting, hey, this doesn't look that bad. It's funny looking at going back and looking at games that you may have once been over, and you talk about nostalgia, but some of these games are where we pick them up originally and they're just they don't really do it for us. Sometimes you go back and play them and you're like, hey, this wasn't as bad as I thought.
I've definitely experienced that with basketball games as well. I think to that point, they were experimenting with live ball physics a lot in Live 14-15, and they've gone to a lot of canned animations, as we've talked about before, in recent games. 18 and 19 especially, and even 2K is getting a lot of canned moments as well the last few years with their new motion system. And I think we're looking back at some of the freedom of those games just a few years ago, and we're realizing it hasn't been a complete step in the right direction, unfortunately, or they haven't been able to, I guess, mask some of the, I talked about it last week, I think the smoke and mirrors of being able to mask those canned moments, because obviously some things under the hood are going to be contrived, because they are video games. You do need to manipulate them to a certain extent, but they're not covering it up as well as they used to. Even just a few years ago, it feels.
Yeah, and Rock and I were just talking about this. Rock from over on the NLVC, and one thing that, and you just touched on this on Live 15, was that stealing felt more organic and authentic. Blocks did as well. You felt like you had more control. Roll over them. There's not as many forced animations. You're not being forced to pick up your dribble when you get bumped, which was a pretty big problem with Live 19. The gameplay is more free flowing and it's more explosive. It has more NBA action.
And I
try to harp on this quite a bit. Just because something is new doesn't mean automatically that it's advanced or better.
Yep.
I mean, it may have, it may have some, better features. It may have some upgrades to modes. It may have a couple, gameplay advantages to a past game. But overall, it doesn't mean that the experience is automatically going to go be better just because it's new. And, the last thing I wanted to say, too, with the whole Live 15 server situation is good for EA. They made a lot of mistakes. But good for them to keep that up as long as they did, because that's kind of unheard of in sports gaming.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Server up for that long. And I think little things like that I do appreciate.
No, it's definitely been cool to see and be able to go back years later and just mess around with stuff. And certainly for me as a content creator and you as a content creator, we can dust it off and look at that. Obviously, 3 weeks or a little under 3 weeks to go to use the online features. I'm actually, what I'll have to do, and this may spoil an upcoming Wayback Wednesday feature, but or at least tease it and preview it, but what I want to do is get the trophy for 100 wins in Ultimate Team, because I'm at 92. I got to 92 when Live 16 came out and made the switch to that, so I'll have to dust it off. While the servers are still up and I still can play Ultimate Team, I want to get to that, and I'll really have to get on that, because 3 weeks to go, and I won't be able to get that. It's going to be lost forever, that trophy, if you haven't got it. It's like the 1,000 people online achievement for Xbox 360 and trophy for PS3 for NBA Live 07. They had a couple. Do you remember that? They had a couple of attempts to get everybody online, like the community organized. You know, can we get 1,000 people online? And just before they shut down the servers for that, they actually got it one last chance, and people did get it. I think that was 2010 that happened. So that was kind of cool that they made it happen. But I'll definitely have to do that because, again, that's a content idea that won't be possible after December 1st. So I'll have to get on that. But it's, as you say, very cool that they kept the servers up and for as long as they have. Definitely unheard of. 2K has extended their server support, their online support, to 27 months. So you basically get 2 seasons plus 3 months of a third of online support for a game. 2K18 will be shutting down December 31st this year. Obviously, remains to be seen what happens with Live 18 and 19. I think 18 and 19 might stay up for a while, especially 19, considering that 20 is has been cancelled.
Yeah, I agree. And you saw what I had to do with my 2K17 roster. Originally, I was just sharing it on Steam, and I ended up having to release the roster file because, like you said, they shut down the servers after what was it, one like a year and a half.
27 months, yeah. So 2 years and 3 months.
So 2 years and 3 months. So I had to release that roster file. And I understand why. You know, one thing I don't understand is I understand what they're doing from a marketing perspective. But this is kind of funny. So if you go on Steam and you look, you see that 2K17 and 2K18 and 2K19 are still $60. It's funny. I went to GameStop tonight, because I'm weird like this and I just want to collect everything with basketball gaming. I purchased NBA 2K16, 2K, and 2K17 for the console, even though I have it for PC, just so I have it for the console.
Oh, I've done the same. I've doubled it, yeah.
I got 2K16 for $9.99, and I got 2K17 for $1.99.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's funny. I know they're trying to do that on Steam as far as you know, keeping the older games the high price so people buy the newest game. They're like, well, why would I buy the old game? I'm going to buy the new game. But just to let you know, anybody who's listening to this, go to your local GameStop if you have one around, because you can get the console version for about $1 or $2. So,
and, you know, you can even package it. The thing is, if they wanted to squeeze a little bit of extra money, make it cheaper and more people will pick it up. And if you package it with, you know, say, at a discounted price with the latest game, maybe people will do it, just because people have a collector's mentality, or at least I know I do, that if you want to own it, and of course, with the way they disappear from Steam, I mean, if you want the Steam version of 2K, I think you can get the Steam version of 2K11 if you go through Google, the store page. It's a bit contrived. If you go through the store in the usual way, through the Steam app or whatever, you can't find it. And that's kind of a shame, that if you haven't got those in the collection, it's harder to get the PC versions now. And that is one of the downsides of digital distribution, as great as it is for other reasons.
Yeah, I ended up getting 2K11 while it was still available, the PC version, while it was still available on Amazon. I was able to get the download link. And
I wish I did, because, I mean, I've got the disc version of those games, which thankfully before 2K, up to 2K14, we've got the disc. But yeah, having to switch discs, it's so 90s, man.
Seriously. But I still like going in, and I, you know, I look at the, you know, the old CD cases we had for holding music CDs and stuff. Whenever I see one of those, because everybody's, you know, listening to Spotify or Pandora, or you know, they're not buying CDs as much anymore. You know, I still have a CD case, and anytime I see a CD case, I get nostalgic. So,
oh well, I mean, speaking of CDs and discs, I suppose, and DVDs. I mean, you had a hell of a time getting a copy of NBA 2K9.
Oh my!
that was an adventure.
I shared some pictures on this, and for anybody who's listening, this was a nightmare, and be weary. I ended up buying, I think it was 5 NBA 2K9 discs for the PC.
Wow!
I showed a picture, I think, with 4 of them, and I tried one more. And basically, what ended up happening was, for those who don't remember, NBA 2K9 was released, and a lot of them were released without a CD key, and it was a big issue. 2K had to come out and apologize. They had to, you know, find a way to provide people with CD keys. But what happened is obviously after the game ran its cycle, and then it became considered quote unquote old, like me. It basically, what happened was
2K20 is looking at it and going, "Okay, boomer."
Yeah, okay, boomer. Yeah, that's the new thing. It drives me nuts. But basically what happened was, is I was buying from sellers who had unopened original NBA 2K9 discs, and they would send it to me and it didn't come with a CD key. So I contacted 2K support. They were like, we can't help you. I contacted, Steam support, and they were like, yeah, we can't help you. And then after going back and forth over and over and over again, with somebody over at, 2K, I finally got a key and was able to get the PC version to work. But what a process. It honestly took me a couple months to get it figured out.
You really did have the worst luck with that. I mean, I got a used copy of 2K9 back in the day for PC, and the key had already been activated, unfortunately, so the seller just refunded me to keep the disc, so I had that. Not that I could do much with it. It was basically a coaster at that point, but if I could get another key. But I did find an unopened copy, and I'd actually forgotten about the issue with the CD keys, that some of them were missing, so I just got very lucky and got one that did have it and was able to get 2K9 working years after it hadn't. But to go through five copies and then have to, be able to have that luck to be able to, find someone, with through the support to actually do that. And people say, why do it? Why bother with it? But as we've alluded to before, it is fun to dust off old games and play with old rosters. You get to see players on teams. I've dusted off games from way back Wednesday and look back at the rosters, the default rosters, and realized, I forgot he played for them. And things like that. As an NBA fan, it's a blast from the past, not just as a gamer, but as an NBA fan, you realize, that's what their roster looked like that year, or, I had this false memory of the early 2000s Clippers about when Darius Miles got traded for Andre Miller, and realizing, Miller and Miles never played with each other on the Clippers. They were traded for each other. And you don't necessarily realize that until you look something up, be it old footage or basketball reference or even a video game, and you kind of see that. And it's a cool trip, to the past, a blast from the past to see that. Not just the gameplay experience and being able to dust off and play an old favorite, but to actually see what the NBA was like. It's a real snapshot of the NBA at that time, which I think is also cool.
Yeah, some people collect cars, some people collect dolls. I collect basketball video games.
Yeah, and, so I do the same. Yeah.
People might, some people think that, maybe I'm weird for, trying that hard to get 2K9. Well, maybe I think it's weird that you're trying to fix up a 1960 Chevy.
It's what you're into. Yeah,
it's whatever you're into, and I think it's 2K9 had a special place with me because it was a game that both of my brothers really loved, and it was a game, in my opinion, that did a lot of things right. And like you say, a lot of it's the interface and looking back on these games. And even if you're not playing them, just, going through the rosters and, Walter Herman was in the NBA,
Yes.
And then looking him up on Basketball Reference and be like, oh, that was his last season, if you didn't know, or whatnot. And I find it, let's put it this way. Yes, nostalgia is a real thing, and I'm not ashamed of it.
Agreed.
So,
No, I absolutely agree. I mean, it's that you can talk about being too stuck in the past, and that is an issue, and, the whole other issue with society and whatnot about, old attitudes and whatever. But as far as being able to enjoy something old and the memories it have, and like you say, you fire up a game, you see those old menus, the music plays, and you remember, and it takes you back to that time, and there is value in that, as long as you can stay in the present, as far as, being gainfully employed or, looking after your responsibilities. But you can certainly ignore your responsibilities with a modern game too. So it's not just that goes beyond nostalgia. That's just irresponsibility, basically.
Exactly.
But it's a lot of fun to do. And with as far as the collection goes, I mean, there are people who collect every single version of Star Wars they can get, which is fine if that's what you're into. If you get all different versions of the different edits to get different, double dip with games, or to get different versions of, I've got, I think, three different versions of the Ultimate Jordan DVD, the documentary on his career, the NBA DVD. And I'll probably get the Blu-ray version as well at some point, just to have that when I see that on special at JB Hi-Fi. and again, it's just like people getting multiple, editions of an album or of a movie or whatever. I got the Japanese version of NBA Live 2002 earlier this year. I think you might have seen that on Twitter with Michael Jordan on the cover in the Wizards jersey. That was a rare collectible. The only way I can play it is through on the PC with an emulator because it won't work in a PAL PS2. But you know, I put it in the emulator and got some screenshots from it. But apart from that, it's just cool to have, you know, on the shelf there or in the collection. Just got the Japanese version of NBA Street that also has Jordan on the cover instead of Stretch Monroe. So that was interesting. Again, can only play it through the emulator, but and I've got the PAL version that I can play whenever on my PS2. But it's just a collectible. It's you know, with a different cover. And yeah,
it's almost criminal. It almost felt criminal getting a 2K17 for like $2. Like, if you really think about it and the content that you're getting, even though it's an older game, like, you know, the other part of this is it's cool to look at it as what was going on in the time and how the announcers talk about the players. Like, and, you know, you put on 2K17 or 2K16, and they're talking about Kobe returning from injury. And, yep. and I find, actually, it was 2K16 and 2K15 where they were, touching on that. And it's just cool to listen to the commentary and hear how it takes you back because they're talking about it like it's the present.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really enjoyable. And I love listening to that on like 2K9 or, in any of the classic games.
So there is value in this, and we will stand by that because there is definitely value. As for Live 15 becoming the next game to be retired, sunsetting NBA Live 15, and I do want to, I don't want to pile on my fellow gamers here. I did see some comments in that Reddit thread, who cares, update NBA Live 19, and I certainly do think NBA Live 19 should be updated if they can put the rookies in that game, a few more roster updates in lieu of NBA Live 20 being released. I think that would be a great idea, but even if, quote-unquote, no one cares that NBA Live 15 is having the server shut down, it's a formality. You need to announce it. I mean, we talk about, and I guess we'll cover about this when we talk about our featured discussion topic this week. You know, we want that transparency from EA and 2K. So it's only appropriate that EA says, hey, just in case you are still playing it, or whether you are, whether you're not, we are shutting down the NBA Live 15 servers. It's a formality to announce that. So the nobody cares thing does bother me, D. We've talked about that before. I think I touched on it last week. That this not my problem, therefore not a real problem. Only what I care about matters, kind of thing. If nothing else, it's something you are doing, so you announce it. It's just a formality.
Yeah, it goes back. We did talk about that. It goes back to the whole thing we talked about last week, where I had people in my comments stating nobody plays my league, or
yeah,
people care more about the online experience. Nobody, or Live should just make a street game because nobody cares about the NBA portion. It's those blanket statements that drive me absolutely nuts. And, those people making those comments are, like we talked about last week, they're just not looking at the big picture. And, EA coming out and announcing that is good instead of, silently doing it.
Yep. like 2K's done on a couple of things, we might add. So.
I was waiting to see if you would bring that up. Instead of being silent about it or, not talking to anybody since July like they did on their Twitter handle. So I think communication is key. I think that's a step in the right direction for them. At least they let people know ahead of time. But in regards to the whole nobody cares, even if there's one person out there that cares, that person is wrong. The person that says nobody cares is wrong.
Yeah. I mean, what it comes down to is, say that, they want to speak with authority, and they know that if they say, I don't care about that, that people are going to say, well, I don't care that you don't care. But if you say, it's like the, people who've come to me in the forum and who've been unhappy with moderation or whatever, and they say everybody's talking about it, everybody says how bad you are, Andrew, at being a mod, and I'm like, well, everybody can then say something, all I've got is your word, and you've just, and I know that you're upset because I've just told you not to do something, so you're acting like a scolded child. So everybody or just you, and it's the way it's human nature, unfortunately, but it is funny to see, and it's something that I'm quite happy to push back on, because it's we really can only speak for ourselves. I mean, there are things where you can speak from a consensus that you can see in the community, But to say that nobody plays these modes or nobody cares about that, speak for yourself, people.
Yeah, I had this happen to me on the forum, actually, where somebody said that, you know, I was critiquing gameplay, and you know, and somebody made a comment about nobody else is comparing, you know, is complaining about that. And then I sent screenshots of a ton of people complaining about it, you know, on Twitter and on Operation Sports, and I had a thread on it and everything, and other people were having issues with it. And the response, you know, I got back was something along the lines of "whatever, bro," you know. And yeah, that's what's frustrating is being on the side of the, you know, the person who cares about something and who's bringing it to light, whether it be good or bad. Is you, if you defend yourself and you provide, you know, evidence that supports your stance and negates theirs, they instead of admitting it, oh well, people do care about it, basically it's whatever, bro, and then they exit, or they completely
you're a loser, you actually went and got some evidence, huh? Geek, you know.
Right, that's one of the worst too. It's wait a minute, you put in all of that effort, and I was like, well, yes, because you tried to call me out and say that nobody cared, but yes, I did put in all that effort, and it's just it's a continuous cycle, and it's really frustrating.
It must be great exercise though, moving the goalposts like that. It's just, that's a lot of dragging back and forth of the goalposts.
Yeah, and but I just don't understand the mental part of it. Like, I don't understand how somebody feels good about that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, how they feel that they, because you know this is what it's about too. Is it's about, you know, winning the conversation. I don't know how somebody feels. Feels like they came out ahead by pulling that. So
it's appearances, I suppose. And there's a whole, you know, a lot of people have done videos and articles about it. And of course, actually, off air, we were talking about it last week. Other incidents where I think you and I both capitulated to a certain extent with discussions in the forum where we've said, where someone has brought up evidence that has proven us wrong. Like, oh, okay, yeah, I didn't actually think about that. And then they said, oh, why aren't you arguing it? Are you just you know, you're wimping out of the discussion. Like, no, you've just proven me wrong. I'm not going to argue a point that I've just been proven wrong on. Like, you got me, man. You know, you win that one. It's I'm not going to, you know, keep going down on a double down on something where it's clearly been proven I'm wrong. But it's whichever way you go, it's kind of funny with some people. But you just gotta laugh it off, I suppose, and move on to the next, hopefully more pleasant discussion.
Yeah, admitting you're wrong is part of being a stand-up guy or gal in my opinion. You know, admitting when, you know, evidence is brought to light that refutes something you said or your point. And whenever somebody does do that, and you and I have had moments where we have done that, you know, I instantly gain more respect for them because they're, with the lack of better, you know, they're manning up. And unfortunately we don't see that enough, especially in this hot take generation and the soundbite generation, and especially on like places like Twitter. You don't see it. You don't see enough people, because everybody feels tough hiding behind a computer screen, or their smartphone. But anyway, the point, I completely agree 100% with you. I think that's probably the most frustrating part of trying to have a discussion is the moving the goalposts and that part of it.
Well, at least recording a podcast, we don't have direct immediate feedback anyway, so we can throw it out there and be as right as we want. But yes,
great. I mean, whatever.
to wrap up that section of the podcast, NBA Live 15 server shutting down December 1st. Get your business done. Get your screenshots. Get your videos. Get your accomplishments, your trophies, your achievements all out of the way, because once those online servers go down, that content, yeah, that's not coming back.
Yeah, and I think the thing is I may jump on and try to make a video. I've been uploading quick highlight videos to Twitter, just of gameplay, which I could do, you know, when the server shut down because I'm playing offline. But I may jump on to Ultimate Team and try to get a video up on my YouTube channel, just so you know people can get, you know, one last look of it. You know, video. So
I've got my Ultimate 90s Sans Jordan, of course, Ultimate Team going in NBA Live 15. So it's going to be nostalgia upon nostalgia for me when I dust that off for the final time, basically.
Yeah, I think the only problem, one of the things, and I know we're going to end that part piece of it, but one of the things that bugs me a little bit about Live 15 is they made a lot of strides over Live 14, but the authenticity is still not there. So, yes, they have some signature jump shots, but using star players doesn't feel like I feel like driving to the hoop with James Harden feels very similar to, you know, a player like Jordan Clarkson. So,
I mean, that's definitely true, and a problem with Live even to this day, I think, and that. That actually, I think we can use that as a very good segue into our main discussion topic this week, which is what basketball gamers want. And that's the title I'm going with because I want to make a ham-fisted reference to a Mel Gibson movie from 2000. Why not? What do basketball gamers want? And of course, you know, that goes back to what we touched on then. You know, nobody cares about this, nobody plays that. There is definitely very differing opinions within the community. I feel we're very splintered to a certain extent. But at the same time, there are things that we do want as basketball gamers, not just from the on-court experience, but also the goodwill, the approach to design concepts, the whole thing with recurrent revenue mechanics, etc. these days, gambling mechanics, things that are affecting not just basketball games, but AAA gaming in general. There's things that we want to see from the basketball gaming experience. Some of them we're getting, some of them we're not. But basically we're going to talk about some of the things that we expect of yearly releases. And I think obviously one of the things that we do want to see is a consistent improvement and not steps in the wrong direction as much as possible.
Yeah, and I think I was actually excited to talk about this because it's pretty... The basketball gaming in general at the moment, online gaming is toxic, right?
Absolutely.
I think the biggest thing and what everybody wants for the most part, even though I don't play online, my want is the same as, you know, my overall want is the same as people who do play online, and it's to create memories with the game. The overall want is to enjoy what we're playing and to be able to enjoy it with our friends. And for me, that would be my brothers who I play with. For other people, it's playing online with their friends. Or if they are connecting with quote unquote randoms, you know, they want to be able to enjoy that experience. But the biggest thing is a game that they can pick up and play that they enjoy more than it frustrates them. So they get more enjoyment out of it, but they're also able to make memories. And they also, in the younger generation, and you'll agree with this, I believe, is they also want to play the in-game, in the cool game. Yes. And at the moment, that's 2K. But they want to be able to show off their game to their friends, or they want to be able to, you know, produce content on YouTube that gets wows, you know, from the people, from the viewers. But again, and I think you'll agree with this, I think the biggest thing is people want a game they can pick up and play and that has more enjoyment than frustration and one overall that can give them create memories.
I think that's a very important point, and it's something that we need to bring up when there's actually constructive criticism of the games. It's not that people want to bash the games or hate them. I mean, there are some who do. Obviously, that's the way some people work as well, human nature. But people, when they complain, it's because they want the game to be better. They want to have that experience, and something about it is not providing that. And they're making a suggestion as to how it could be better. I mean, this is the thing, and I've said it so many times when we've compiled wish lists over the years. Don't just say, better gameplay, make franchise mode better, or whatever. You've got to explain what it is, and people say, oh, you know, you're going into these long rants about everything, and it is admittedly easier to go into a long diatribe about what's wrong than what you like, if only because when you do that, it sounds like you're gushing like a fanboy, but then you do it the other way, and it sounds like you're ranting like a hater. So it's you're kind of screwed either way as far as public perception sometimes, but it is why we do have these complaints and why we say, well, this is what we'd like to change and this is what would make this better. Because, yeah, as you say, we want to create those memories on the virtual hardware with these games and be able to maybe dust them off years later and relive some of those memories with the nostalgia we were just talking about. Or if nothing else, be able to play this game from release day until the release of the next game, because we have a limited window with these games that to really get the most out of the content when they're fresh. Because when the new game comes out, usually you want to play it. Ideally, you want to play that and play with the new season, the new players, the new features, the latest My Career story for some people. I mean, it's not my thing. I mean, well, I do play My Career in recent years. I have played My Career, but the story section, the story aspect of it is, you know, I've been very critical of that for reasons that I won't recap in detail now. But the point is, there's something new about, you want that new experience, and you know that you've only got 12 months before you're going to have to start grinding up your player again and getting all the collecting new cards in the card collecting modes again. You know you have to start over. Whereas with a game like, I'm going to use Fallout because of course I am. You know, I can still go back to Fallout 3 or New Vegas or 4 and replay them, do a new playthrough, do a new character, do different things in the story branching, things like that. And there's not a new game every year to distract me. Well, there's a new NBA, at least one NBA game every year to distract me from other games. But as far as, there's not a new Fallout title every year that I need to grind up in. You know, that is an issue with sports games that come out every single year, is that you do have that limited window of when they're current and getting the most support and the most new content, etc. So yeah, you want to be able to play that game from launch, ideally launch to the launch of the next one. And that's why people do have their complaints, because when something is bothering them, when they're not getting that positive experience, I mean, you want to speak up, especially since we do have that connection to developers these days.
Yeah, the amount of times I've heard TLDR, too long, didn't read, and seen, you know, people say that I was word vomiting just because I, you know, put things in more detail, more than a soundbite, more than a hot take, where I, you know, broke down my feelings about a certain aspect of a game, a feature, you know, gameplay or whatnot. I've heard it so many times, and it is frustrating because the developers need something to work off of. You know, they're not, you know, anybody that says, man, the gameplay this year sucks, or the player movement sucks, or, you know, This is frustrating, and they don't go into more detail. The developers aren't going to be able to work off of that. And that's, again, a thing where people are missing the big picture. And I think that we need to get better overall, as not on the NLSC, I'm saying, but sometimes on the NLSC, but get better overall at giving more detailed feedback, because I'm telling you, people don't realize the power that they have. You know, people don't realize that they, you know, people are listening. I had a situation where, and I'll go into this real quick, you know, where Mike Wang talked about, he made a post about a camera view for 2K18, I mean, for 2K19. And I sent a video in the comments to my, I commented on the video post that he posted on Twitter, with a gameplay video from 2K17, and I went into depth about it, and I said, you know, we weren't able to achieve this camera view on 2K18 because you put the camera too close to the back of the player, because it was a broadcast camera view. And I had mentioned that I would really like them to revert back to a broadcast generic that supported the view that I showed in that, you know, in the comment section on that I commented on his Twitter post. And he commented back and said, you know what? That's a good idea. I will. And he made that decision right there, then and there. He said, I will make sure that the broadcast generic view for 2K19 matches what it was on 2K17.
Yeah. So, and you've shown the example. So
who am I?
Yeah.
You know, who am I? I'm nobody, really. But in the grand scheme of things, I am somebody. And people, you know, if you give feedback the right way, we're all somebody, and they will listen.
And I guess that's the other point, is what gamers want is to be listened to be taken seriously, to not be dismissed. I mean, if people, you know, fix your effing game, you suck, etc. I mean, that stuff, if you're a developer, you're going to tune that out, and rightfully so. I mean, if we are going to interact with the developers, we should do it respectfully and give that detail. And again, whether, even if it's even saying improve the game is not necessarily impolite, but it is imprecise, it is undetailed, lacking in any kind of real suggestion of how to actually improve the game, whereas you actually gave those examples and showed, you know, what you're actually talking about. But what we do want is when you do that is to be listened to. And there are times, I mean, that was a positive example, but it does feel like sometimes that we are dismissed, and I'm sure the developers get a lot of hate. So, I mean, I can't fault them for sometimes tuning things out from the community. I mean, you look at Dazar had to deactivate his Twitter for a while there because it was just getting ridiculous amount of...
He's finally back up. But no, to that point, that's where EA has gotten criticized pretty hardcore over the last 13 years, is it feels like they have ignored... you know, what people want and what people are talking about. Now, not everybody's talking about the right things, but there is a good majority of people that have been saying, hey, why did you take this out of the game? Hey, you should put this in the game. Hey, this is going to help the gameplay experience, and people feel ignored. And I think that's drawn some, you know, made people strongly dislike EA at this point, especially in the basketball gaming space.
Well, it makes you think, why bother? Why bother giving the feedback if it's not being listened to?
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is that there are people with, you know, for every, you know, I think there's more people that make hot takes, and there's more people that aren't descriptive. But there are people out there that are saying the right things and are echoing each other. And there's, you know, EA Sports should know where to go at this point to find those people, whether it be the group that I'm part of, a bunch of great guys, you know, the NLVC and Angel, who's a member there as well, and the NLSC in the, you know, in the wish list section, and the first impression in the impression section, you know, and there's some really great threads now, and it seems better recently over on Operation Sports, of people being pretty descriptive. So there are a lot of different ways to get that correct, you know, the right feedback. Rock made a comment. He's from the NLVC. Made a comment on our last podcast that, you know, Reddit is if people are taking feedback from Reddit, that's a place where games die. so if Reddit is not a good place for them to be, then they should have recognized that by now, and they should be trying to take feedback in from Operations Sports, NLVC, NLSC, etc. They've been around long enough where they should know, you know, who they should be listening to and where to keep their eyes on, and what to keep their eyes on.
I think the approach to the community has definitely changed in recent years. It's become very much about the quote unquote influencers, which usually comes down to YouTube. And look, I'm not saying that there are not people that on YouTube that are making great content, because there are, and I'm not going to call out people who aren't. Not going to, you know, start any kind of beef over that. It's not worth that kind of internet drama. But I'm sure people, you know, listening will be able to form their own opinions of who's good and who's bad. It's going to be very apparent, and who's just looking for, you know, clout, who's looking, quote unquote, clout, and who's, you know, and looking to get the freebies and to get the trips to EA or 2K and whatever, and who's actually trying to look out for themselves and their fellow, or look out for their fellow gamers rather than themselves, I should say. But I think there's been a very big focus on those influences from both companies, unfortunately, and it's left a lot of us traditional fans and people who will give that feedback and really want to help the game and have that interaction with the developers. It's kind of left us out in the cold, unfortunately, because it's all about the people who are all the subscribers on YouTube, and they're not necessarily, and not all of them, but not all of them are necessarily giving the best feedback. And these are the voices that are the loudest and the voices that are being listened to. And also the voices that aren't calling them out on bad practices that are lacking goodwill, because then they lose their logos, they lose their trips to the community events, and it's really kind of insidious, and it's a real shame that aspect of it has come that way, with the influencers having influence when maybe they shouldn't have so much influence, at least some of them.
Maybe they should listen to us boomers, Andrew.
Apparently so, yeah.
No.
Okay, boomer. Oh, us millennial age boomers. That's a new one I've heard.
That whole thing is really big on Twitter right now, and it's driving me up a wall. I wanted to point that, you know, as far as the influencers aspect, and we talked about this actually on the NLVC podcast as well. I think the problem is like you said, there's people that want so badly to be connected with 2K that and EA that they will do whatever it takes to not step on toes. And they will do whatever it takes, like you said, to not lose their logo or to be invited to community events or to, you know, get a first look at the game, et cetera, you know, to get freebies in the mail if that's what they do and stuff like that. The problem is when those are the people you're listening to, you're not getting the full feedback because they're not going to be harsh on the things that they should be harsh on, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because basically what they want to be able to do is stay connected with 2K and put out videos. That's exactly. and get more followers or subscribers and whatnot. So yes, they may be critiquing and maybe they are critiquing behind the scenes. But they're a little bit too close to 2K, in my opinion, to be qualified as, you know, like an average gamer or like an average gamer feedback or, you know, just part of the regular population. And I think that absolutely gets in the way of, you know, the proper, if they're listening mostly to those guys, I think that there's a chance that they're not getting the best feedback.
Well, the fact that it's been revealed that a lot of them have a contract with 2K,
yeah,
you know, I don't know what the situation with EA is, there's actually a contract that what kind of specifies it. And I think Agent 00 has said that he wasn't comfortable with some of the conditions of his, the contract, which is why he didn't sign the most recent offer. And I mean, I've been to some community events back in the day. I've signed non-disclosure agreements saying that I won't reveal certain things until I get the green light, which is only appropriate because they've got their, you know, when they want to roll things out and maybe certain things, you know, are under NDA, whatever. And that's a little bit different because at the same time, they encourage us to be honest on the day with the feedback and honest to the communities. I mean, they might have said, look, you know, we'd like, you know, check this out. We want to highlight this new feature, which is something that we wanted to know about anyway. But I've never been instructed what to say or what not to say, apart from, you know, we're not ready to reveal this until, you know, what, 2-3 weeks down the line or whatever. We will let you know when we're ready to talk about it. They have, and then I did. But that seems to be out the window. And of course, you know, I don't know how it works. I haven't been to a community event since 2015. But, you know, a lot of the developers that I've met, I will say, I mean, the developers themselves usually do care very much about the game and the feedback, as long as it's, you know, polite, constructive, fair, well-reasoned, etc. What happens as far as the marketing department and the suits and some of the, well, there's one digital marketer in particular that I think is very problematic these days, but I guess we'll get to that in, I guess, shortly as well. But it is a shame for the direction of the games that they are listening to voices that that don't necessarily have the rest of their fellow gamers in mind.
One thing that I like that Mike Wang does, and you've probably seen this, is he puts up polls.
Yep.
So he'll put up a poll and say, you know, how big do you want the shot meter to be? Or is it too big? Or he'll say, you know, tell me about this defense or something like that. And he'll put up polls and people will vote and get into the comments. And that is definitely something that I wish EA would do. I wish they would be
more
active on social media and basically, you know, first off, that would get their name out there, the individual who's putting out those polls. It doesn't have to be EA Sports NBA, you know, Twitter handle. Yep. It can be just one of the developers or something like that, or, you know, community manager. But I would like them to be more engaging as far as put some polls out there and get feedback from, you know, the Twitter audience, or, you know, go on Operation Sports and create a link, you know, ask the devs or something like that. And they can do that. And it blows my mind for a company that has been around for so long to have this many disconnects with their people, like this many, they have so much opportunity to reach out to people more than ever in history. This is, it's so easy to get in touch with people, engage the pulse and whatnot. And, you know, sure. And they're just not out there. So we talked about that also on the NLDC podcast, but I want to reiterate again, you know, for anybody, if any of the dev team listens here or anybody from EA Sports, you guys have to start engaging people. It's unbelievable that it's 2019 and you're not putting your, you know, NBA Live and the NBA Live name over the years, you know, trying to put it in people's living rooms and, you know, engaging the people on social media. So just please, please put yourself out there for NBA Live 21.
The funny thing is they did used to do Twitter Q&As when Sean O'Brien was the executive producer. They were doing that a lot more often because we participated in some and got some of the questions answered through the NLSC account, at the NLSC on Twitter, of course. But it's really has moved to Reddit. Like, a lot of the Q&As and the interaction has moved to Reddit. And with some of the problems that we mentioned before, maybe that's part of the problem.
And yeah, the other thing too, and you'll agree with this, is why limit yourself? Like, why limit yourself to Reddit? You people.
Yeah.
If you're
everywhere.
On Reddit, you're online. If you're on Reddit, you're online. There's, you know, there's Facebook. There's, you know, Twitter. There's Instagram. There's Operation Sports. There's the NLSC. There's the NLVC. There's so many different outlets for you to be reaching out to people and gauging the pulse and taking in feedback. It is incredibly foolish to limit yourself in the social media spectrum if you're EA Sports.
The only thing I can think of is maybe a place like Reddit, because you do have moderators just like a forum such as the NLSC or ever at Operation Sports. Maybe you can have more of a moderated discussion, whereas Twitter in particular can be a dumpster fire and a real cesspool with people jumping in. I mean, maybe it's that, but you can also ignore and block and mute as from at least your own timeline and just focus on the constructive. Maybe it's that, but I think marketing is something that, and pushing that brand and really making NBA Live appealing is something that they have struggled with. You know, we can talk about the struggles of the getting the game to where it needs to be, and that's certainly a topic that we've covered many occasions. But being able to push that game and get the name out there, as you said, is such a big thing. And you know, you brought it up last week when you brought up the 2K has the 2K cam. What is the live cam? There is no live cam, but there should be, and there could be. Let's say that the other way around, probably, actually. But just like getting that branding, getting that awareness, making it the cool thing, getting people talking about it. I mean, even when you talk about that camera, similar camera angles in live, people refer to it as a 2K cam. It's kind of like using a genericized brand name, like Band-Aid. You know, 2K has got that.
Yep.
And if live could get something like that as well, that's very big for the brand. I mean, they talk about how it can be damaging for the brand, but it's also, at least in video games, I think that would be big.
I want you to think about that, and this is crazy, and I'm sure you've thought about this before. One of the biggest problems when people talk about playing basketball video games is, hey, I can't see the whole floor. Or, you know, when I get a rebound, when somebody grabs a rebound, I can't see up the floor, like if they're playing in broadcast. Or, you know, I can't, or the camera's bobbing around too much, and you get a lot of that. That live cam, you know, from like Live 95, like Live 96, that camera view, I think, what did you call it, isometric?
Isometric, like, the classic cam, they call it in later games,
But if you look at that camera view, that can be, you can see almost the entire court, and it doesn't even need to be flipped. It's like, why not have that as a standard option in basketball games? Because it gives people an opportunity to have a camera view that literally lets them see most of the court and gives a good view of the action in general.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, there's nostalgia there as well, because if you do market it as the classic cam or live cam or classic live cam or something like that, you know, it's got that brand awareness as well.
No, absolutely.
As well as functionality, obviously.
Yeah, the brand awareness, you know, live cam, you know, like you said, they're calling the live behind cam 2K cam. I think in live like baseline.
Basically just baseline camera. Player lock, something like that, yeah, basically.
Right.
If it doesn't have that that awareness.
Yeah, and it's little things like that, and like I think I said it on the last podcast, is I think it just speaks to a bigger problem as far as EA needing to, you know, find their identity and, you know, get their name out there. And, you know, you mentioned as far as, you know, what gamers want, is it, not only did they want to create memories and they want a game that can keep them immersed for long periods of time. So, you know, if you want to stay on with that topic, if you're talking about, you know, the appropriate modes to keep people engaged, you know, a robust franchise mode, something that they can enjoy the game even after the game cycle, etc. But, you know, the other thing is they want to play something that has a brand awareness, right? That's a cool,
yep,
brand that's in other people's living rooms and that people know about. And especially like the younger demographic truly cares about that. So Live needs to make their brand cool again, basically. Yep. And they need to get it out there. And part of that's obviously making a great game, but also another part of that is marketing.
Absolutely. Agree on both counts. Before we get too far away from the, you know, talking about what game has won as far as transparency and or certainly being listened to, you know, before we get too far away from that, just want to give a shout out to Mike Wong, Beluga, of course. Briefly, he did work for EA. He went over to EA and was working on Live 09 and Live 10. I do think that moving in that different direction and alienating him and making him want to go back to 2K, I think was a big mistake for EA. You know, I mean, there's a lot of mistakes made with NBA Elite 11, but certainly that change in direction that pushed out a lot of people who had some great ideas for 09 and 10, you know, that was a big part of the problem why it crashed and burned. But I actually did meet Mike at the NBA Live 09 community event in 2008. You know, great guy, very friendly, very knowledgeable, very passionate about the games. But one thing that really impressed me about him, Deep, was when he came over to us, I was playing with Brian, Pasta Padre. He was there. We were both playing and renewing our rivalry from the playing each other at the previous event. And Brian still got it over me, unfortunately. I have to give that up to him. Norton 2 against him in big games. But anyway, he came over to us, and the first thing he said was, tell me what you don't like. Not, tell me how good the game is, how good is this, are you, you know, not even are you enjoying it, just says, what have you noticed that's wrong? That's what he wanted to know. And you can see that in his Twitter polls and everything. He wants to know, how can we improve the game? What is something you're noticing that's not positive to the experience? So I think he is very aware of that, and, you know.
That's why he's great. And, you know, and I've seen him say in the comments where somebody will say, yeah, but can you handle this? And he'll literally say, I'm slightly disconnected from that process, but I will make sure it's addressed. Like, he will,
yeah.
That goes so far, just doing that. And, you know, the other thing with Mike Wang is I was listening to, you had posted in the, I can't remember if it was you or me. We posted the link. It might have been me. We posted the link of Mike Wang talking about his departure from EA Sports.
Yep, I commented and said that was your thread, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I listened to that entire conversation, and basically what it was is he said EA and I were not on the same page as far as design. So as far as the game's design, and like you said, that was very, they had momentum with Live 10. Like if you go,
they did.
Go on IGN and you look at GameSpot and you look at other reviews, it was being reviewed very well. And they were saying, you know, Live's back on track. And then when Wang ended up moving on because of that disagreement with EA, then they, you know, we know what happened next. But I agree. I think I have to give Mike Wang a lot of credit for being transparent, especially in his position, because he's very high up. It's very impressive. You know, he's in the comments and he's doing those polls, and it really is a shame that EA lost him.
And no, I have to also give credit to Sean O'Brien when he was the EP of Live. He came on our podcast a couple of times, was very open about the situation. You know, it didn't try to sugarcoat anything, saying, you know, I want the game to be here and we're not here yet and everything. And he was very open to it. And, you know, he was instrumental in getting me over there for the NBA Live 16 event, you know, and you know, approving me and saying yes, that I was the voice that, you know, was very flattering to hear that they were still valuing my opinion, at least at that point in time, I guess. And I say that knowing that I still have some contact with a couple of the guys on the team, and they've always, you know, whenever I send through the wish list to the people on the team that I do know, it's always received very gratefully. And you know, how much of it gets put in, I mean, they've got their roadmap, and of course that's beyond them. It also comes down to the suits and everything else and looking for hooks. But I do think listening to those voices is so important. Listening to the community is so important. And we talk about being listened to and being respected. I mean, and again, we have to be respectful to them as well. That's, you know, it's a two-way street, obviously. But you do see some of that with certain people within the companies. And okay, we're just going to put it up front. We're going to talk about Ronnie 2K for a second here. you know, the whole thing a couple of years ago when somebody brought up to him, and it should be noted that Ronnie 2K is not a developer. He is a digital marketer, community liaison, kind of-ish. You know, he's not actually making the games. He gets a lot of credit for it, and sometimes blame as well. What bothers me is that he takes credit but passes the blame onto the developers when it's negative. That's, I think, the way he throws developers under the bus is very inappropriate, especially when he's taking credit for things that he did not actually personally design. But when somebody brought it up to him, you know, because he obviously is taking some feedback and passing it along, allegedly, presumably. But a couple of years ago, when somebody brought up the whole issue of creator-player hairstyles, and he said, he dismissed it very rudely and said, this is more than a Barbie dress-up game, which, considering the clothes that you can get for your players in the neighborhood in my career, is a ridiculous statement to make. And the funny thing about it was that the day after he said that, this We Are Not a Barbie dress-up game, a developer blog dropped talking about the shoes you could buy for your player. And I just thought, isn't that just so ironic? So perfectly ironic. And you know, just the almost karmic, the way that came up. And it's one of those things. And there's a lot of stuff where, and I know he absorbs a lot of hate. And you can say how much of that's justified, debate that back and forth. I'm sure there's a lot of people saying very inappropriate things, and that is inappropriate. You don't make threats. You don't make racial comments. You don't, you know, anything that's really rude and threatening and aggressive. You know what? You know, nobody should be accepting that online. That's a big problem with online discourse. And, you know, I disavow that. I say that's, I, you know, wash my hands of that. That is definitely not appropriate. But there's a lot of people who are just, you know, trying to interact and saying, hey, you know, being very reasonable about it. And he's throwing it back in the community's face. I think, and with some of the flat out misinformation in NBA 2K20, I look at some of the things, the way he's interacting with people on, you know, social media, making some very inappropriate remarks about Agent 00, etc. And I'm looking and thinking, how are you still employed? You know, and not, I normally would not call for someone's job. I'm not specifically calling for his job because, you know, that's kind of overstepping the line as well. But at the same time, it's very inappropriate stuff, and it's not showing the community very much respect. And not to discount the hard work of the developers, or even Ronnie himself with some of the marketing that he's done, because he does go out all out on it, of course. But, you know, there are people supporting the game year after year and buying new additions and pumping money in with microtransactions and continuing to support the game even when there's been some ups and downs. I just don't think you treat your consumer base like that. And we want to be respected. And it is a two-way street, of course, and we have to be respectful ourselves. But what gamers want? To be respected. And that's something that Ronnie doesn't do.
No, absolutely. I think it spoke volumes when, you know, there were two different things that were trending with 2K20. One was Fix 2K20 that was trending. And then the other one was Fire Ronnie 2K, because there were videos that came out that showed him blatantly lying about some features that were going to be in 2K20 and components of my career and whatnot. And they interviewed him about it. I can't remember who did the interview, but in the interview, they asked him how he felt about the Fire Ronnie 2K and the, you know, Fix 2K20. Or they asked him about the Fire Ronnie 2K, and he goes, it doesn't bother me. And he said he was basically happy about it.
Yeah, because it's saying it's awareness of the game. Like, it shows that we're relevant or something like that. That's your takeaway?
Yeah. And well, it shows disconnect, because the whole point of Fire Ronnie 2K is because he lied. And he made people think that there were certain things in the game and certain aspects of the games that he actually said they were going to be in it, and they weren't. So you can't twist that as a positive. It looks really bad on your part, and he's still getting killed with it on Twitter whenever he makes a post, whether it's, you know, felt cute, might delete later for NBA 2K Playgrounds when it was announced he was in it, or whatever.
I'm glad you brought that. I'm glad you brought that up, because there was a great response to that where somebody said, dude, have some humility, you know, not, oh, it's about time or something. Say, oh, you know, really thrilled to be in the game or something. And you can say, oh, it's just words, but it's yeah, the sentiment. it's the underlying sentiment of you know, I deserve this. And like, you know, I don't think that's... you know, it just came across as so arrogant. And when you've already got... You know, you've already been doing this stuff and really alienating the community. It just felt so tone deaf.
Yeah, because he says in the tweet, he goes, finally they put me in the game. And the preface of it, the start of it was, felt cute, might delete later. And it's just, it rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. And it also rubbed you and I the wrong way. But you know what's funny? It's not just Ronnie2K. And this isn't, I'm not trying to take shots at anybody, but there's certain things that I notice when, you know, people are active on social media. And Chris Manning made a comment recently where somebody had a gameplay complaint, and he responded with, we can't teach skill.
Yes,
or we teach skill, something along those lines. And it was completely tone deaf, and basically it rubbed people the wrong way, as it should. Because instead of acknowledging the critique, he basically amounted it to, we can't teach skill, and threw that person under the bus.
It's your fault. There's no problem with us. It's
your fault. It's not the game. It's your fault. Right, exactly.
2K does that a lot. You know, I've mentioned the, you know, there's a problem with your connection. Try again and pay close attention to the instructions. Communication and not being passive-aggressive is something that 2K oddly struggles with. And it's funny because I do think Chris, you know, LA2K, I have talked to him a little bit over the years. You know, he actually sent us when 2K15 was announced as a next-gen port for PC, or, you know, PS4 or Xbox One port, he actually did, you know, I reached out and said, hey, you know, would we ever get a screenshot that's just got the 2K wordmark, you know, just so we can put one up on the NLSC? And he got us a really high-def screenshot, you know, and sent it along to us, and you know, that was very cool of him. And I don't think I've ever mentioned that on air before, but, you know, shout out to Chris for doing that and, you know, having some interaction with us, because it is hard, you know, with us being NBA-live.com, founded as the NBA Live Series Center. But there has been a couple of times, compared to Ronnie, who has just been very petty over the years, Chris has been better. But he has made a couple of gaffes like that, and it's been surprising because he's usually been a much more chill guy.
Yeah, Chris actually, and, you know, he's all over 2K TV now. You know, with the 2K20 and whatnot. He definitely has some great interactions. And he's obviously, like you stated, you know, he obviously works hard, and he's obviously helped make his brand. And he is. He's kind of a brand himself now. You know, he has a slew of followers, and he's on 2K TV, and you know, everybody knows who he is. And yeah, that's definitely not a knock on Chris as a person. But those type of tweets, whether it's done from 2K, whether it's done from EA, whether it's done from Bethesda, or how do you pronounce however you pronounce that?
Oh, Bethesda.
Yeah, Bethesda. And whoever's doing it, they rub people the wrong way. And if it's done often by people of authority or considered as authority, whether it's be Chris Manning or Ronnie2K or Mike Wang or whoever, it adds up. And then people start saying, you know, what the heck, they're not listening to us, they're just mocking us.
And you've got a bigger platform. I mean, again, they absorb more hate than is deserved from people who don't know how to interact, and that's on us as a community.
Yep.
Maybe not us personally, because, you know, we're delightful individuals, believe me. But certainly, some gamers can be absolutely freaking toxic, you know. I just wrote a Friday Five about how we can be less toxic, so there's no, you're not going to get any denial from me, any argument from me about that. We can be toxic. But I think... Maybe it sounds unfair to hold them to a higher standard, but again, they are the professionals in the situation, the bigger platform, the bigger following. I mean, if Ronnie retweets somebody with a harsh remark, he has a lot of sycophantic followers who are just going to jump on the guy. I think we talked about that maybe off air last week. Never argue with a blue tick. It never goes well. Yeah. On Twitter. So you do expect a certain, and when you're representing, when you are the face of a company, you are expected to behave and conduct yourself professionally, and that hasn't always been the case. Similarly, it's not as common with developers, because I think they do really understand, obviously, the creative process and many of them having come from the community, what it's like. But you'll see a couple of, sometimes developers, you know, will retweet a highlight, an NBA, real NBA highlight that's got something really weird, like someone hits a half-court shot or something, and they'll say something like, and if that happens in 2K, we'd get all kinds of heat for it, and it's like...
That happened. Actually, I think you're talking... So, basically, it was Dazar who posted the video of a drive to the hoop where there was... the offensive player bullied the defensive player. He bumped him. Yep. And the defensive player kind of staggered out of bounds, and then he finished. And then he made a comment about, but yeah, we shouldn't, you know, kind of like mocking the crowd that complains about it. He made a comment, you know, we shouldn't have those, this certain badge or those badge animations. Yes. And that's probably where you're coming from with that. And,
yep,
and
that's a recent example. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And that frustrated with a lot of, you know, of course there's people at the top of the comments that were like, you tell them. Dazar. But then there's a lot of people who actually have issues with the badge system and how the gameplay is so reliant on badges now, and so badges play such a big role in the gameplay and how the players play, that were like, come on man, why? Like, why even post that and say that?
It's been very dismissive. I mean, in that posting it in that context, in that manner, and using those words, and I've obviously with some of the heat that Dazar's taken, it's probably a bit of frustration boiling through, you know, because Dazar is a great bloke. You know, we've had him on the podcast a couple of times, and does care very deeply about the games. But I agree. I saw that and I was like, oh, that's, you know, reminded me of some of those other tweets. And I think the problem is with that. And I'll use an analogy that I know that you'll like. Is it's when people will grab a random clip of 80s or 90s basketball where the defense has broken down and they'll go off. And you say the defense was great back in the day. Look at that. And it's one example of not great defense. And we're judging the entire, decades by this one clip where the defense perhaps was a bit looser, you know, for whatever reason, or there was a breakdown or whatever. And we're judging the whole decades by this, and it happens today as well. I mean, you can certainly anything in isolation, and that's my problem with that argument from developers, which I know it's hitting back on people who are just bashing the game relentlessly, so I can understand the frustration. But there are things that should happen in the games, but the frequency and the context of them happening in the games, that's the problem. I mean, you can show a highlight of Kobe Bryant making a tough turnaround fadeaway three over two defenders and swishing it, and you can say, well, look, it happens in real life. And it does, but not every single play. And if the AI is doing it frequently, every single play when they are behind to catch up, that's very contrived. That's not realistic. It's something that can happen in real life, but probably not to that frequency or in every single context. And I think that's... And in our feedback, it's also, you know, to be fair, to acknowledge that as well, saying, well, it should happen... It's just it's happening a little bit too often, or it's happening in a way that's not, or the CPU can get away with it, but I can't. You know, the argument is not necessarily that it is in the game, but how it's in the game, how it's coming about. And I think that's something that's very important, both in our feedback to give and for the developers to understand where we're coming from, that is where we're coming from.
You know, it's funny you brought that up, because you know how many times I've harped on that with the skating issues.
Yes.
I will bring up the skating, and I'll show numerous instances of skating and floating above the floor, and I'll show entire gameplay videos of skating. And somebody will come at me and say, skating has always been in all of the games. It's no worse now. Here, look at a video of one instance of skating in 2K17. And when, like you said, there's levels. There's volumes. That doesn't refute my point that skating overall is a bigger issue in the newer last three titles than it is in 2K17, 2K16, 2K15, 2K14, and before. Just because you show me one highlight of skating in 2K17 doesn't mean that it's at the same volume. Or as big of a problem as it is in 2K20.
Well, the other thing is compounded, compound frustration. I mean, even if we take all the evidence, and even if it was the same amount of skating in 17 as 20, that's a few more games that have come out with the same issue, making it a legacy issue, and there's more frustration, and you kind of forgive it in the early. I mean, look, you go back to NBA Live 06 PC, which is one of my favorite games of all time, one of the best NBA Live releases, one of the most complete all-around releases, but it does have some skating because that's the tech wasn't as advanced at the time. Foot planting tech wasn't as good as it is now and what we've seen in the years since. And you go back and you can say, oh, well, you know, that's just the way it was, and that is where you make some allowances for nostalgia. But as the games move on and you still see that, you're like, well, okay, can this get any better? And it's becoming an issue, and it's remaining an issue. And I think remaining an issue is the big sticking point for a lot of people, that we can forgive a lot of stuff because developing games is hard. You know, I think a lot of people just think it's like typing into Notepad, play realistically, save as NBA 2KXE, and that's it. It's like, no, programming and coding is very difficult.
Or a decision maker points at a developer who's sitting at a computer and says, make them foot plant better.
yeah.
That's not the way it works.
If it was that easy to make the perfect basketball video game, we'd have it by now. That's how I like to put it. But, you know, we can understand that, but when the issues continue year after year and don't seem to be addressed or improved or even seem to go backwards in some cases, there is that compound frustration, I think, and it's just as it builds up on the developer side from having to take it too much heat and getting hate and really nasty comments, it also, when we feel that we haven't been listened to for a long time or that the game has gone in a bad direction or whatever, you know, sometimes that it compounds that frustration and we lash out, and it becomes a vicious cycle, unfortunately.
And that goes back to what gamers want. So, like you said, they want to see improvement. So whether, you know, it's improved, it normally, you know, when a new game comes out, they want to see improvement in certain areas of gameplay. And like you said, when they're still in the game for years, and it becomes legacy issues, you know, like we've talked about body steals, body blocks, stuff like that, that's been in the game for such a long time, it wears on people, and that's not what gamers want. You know, they don't want those issues in the games every year, and they expect improvement, you know, year in and year out.
And there's also a disconnect between collectively us as gamers, because, and it goes back to the nobody cares about that, nobody plays about that, is that some people, you know, you'd like to think that people want the same kind of improvements across the board, and I think there is consensus to a certain extent, as much as there can be between a diverse range of gamers, because if you're an online gamer, you're not going to care as much about My League or even My League Online. You're probably going to be wanting to play maybe My Team Online, maybe, but probably the connected experiences in My Career. But it's getting to the point where even people are saying, who wants to play My Career, the NBA side of things? Like, who wants to play bots? And like, people who want to play the experience of an NBA, being an NBA player, want to play My Career NBA. That's, you know, pretending that you can't understand the appeal of something is basically trying to put it down without sounding condescending and utterly failing, because people can read through the lines and know it is absolutely being condescending. So if you're pulling out the I don't understand, you do understand, you're just being a dick about it.
The other side of the coin is the people who say, well, they should just get rid of this mode because it's trash. No.
Yeah.
If you can't see the big picture of the reason why they have that mode in the game, for example, I've seen many people say Live should get rid of Ultimate Team. Why? Yeah. Why? Because you don't like it?
Exactly. Yeah.
Because the grand scheme of things, with like as far as like Ultimate Team, and you know, like Live Mobile and whatnot, yep, and those are pretty popular modes, honestly, and they get a lot of get a lot of love on social media and even on YouTube. I mean, look at like Troyden. Like, if you go back and look at Troyden, who, you know, has his face in 2K now and you know, is invited to all the community events and whatnot. If you look at his older videos before he got in with 2K, like, truly in with them, he was constant My Team videos. You know what I mean? Those modes draw a lot of attention. And I've had even people ask me if I would do, like, an Ultimate Team series or a My Team series for my YouTube channel. So, you know, and I've heard many times that people say, that, you know, Live's Ultimate Team is really poor, and why are they focusing on that? They should just, you know, scrap it.
Focusing on it? I'd love them to focus on it, because I, you know, as much fun as I've had with some of those modes in previous games this generation, it needs a lot more focus to be. It could be so much more focus placed on that mode. And that's not to disparage the hard work that goes into it, you know, as I always say, but it's not been the main focus. That clearly not been the main focus. So Yeah, that's a weird comment to make on their part.
Yeah, but you might have seen that, though, where people said scratch it. And the other thing, too, is you're right, like team, you know, there was an entire cycle of the game for a couple months where Clyde Drexler and all these legends in the mode couldn't dunk. They literally couldn't dunk. And that's like you said, that's a kind of a lack of focus and a lack of priority on that mode. But the thing is, you know, let's, for gamers who are listening to this, and, you know, let's look at the big picture when we're making those critiques. There is no way, in my opinion, that Live or 2K should get rid of Ultimate Team or My Team.
Agreed. Yeah, because you cater to those different preferences. And this is something that's a very interesting divide about what gamers want, is that there are gamers who want to have those diverse experiences, even if they're not interested in them themselves, knowing that other people are, and saying, well, I want my mode to be great. But you know, yeah, I want your mode to be great too. I think this should be a great well-rounded product, which I think is the correct opinion. As much, you know, we can say that opinions can't be correct or incorrect, but I think that is the right frame of mind, shall we say, that the games do need to be well-rounded. Most reasonable gamers would agree with that sentiment. However, there seems to be some gamers who want, they want to hold it over the other people that their modes aren't in the game or up to scratch, so because they believe that their way of playing is correct, the only way to play. And I mentioned this in the Friday Five about how we can be less toxic. The idea that they want to, that if somebody else is not getting their way, that it makes them feel smug and happy because they're being catered to, but somebody else isn't. And we all want to be catered to, but some people want to be catered to the exclusion of others. And that's just a very toxic mindset.
Yeah, the other funny part, with this is what that made me think of is, and boy, have I seen this on posts where you've seen a few of my Twitter, some of my tweets that they're like detailed feedback or whatnot. I'll see people in the comments that say, if they just fix the rep system, they have the perfect game. Or they'll say, if they just fix this, the game is perfect. Or if they make the franchise mode, the game's all set. Those people literally are only thinking about what they're playing. They're only thinking about what's going to impact them. If they,
what they want.
Yeah, exactly. If EA Sports only fixed franchise mode, and they left everything else the way it was on their next release, that wouldn't do anything for them.
No, it would still be problematic. I mean, those of us who want franchise mode to be better would say, oh, well, this is great. We're finally getting some more attention for franchise mode. Meanwhile, Ultimate Team and The One, I almost said Rising Star, The One and Ultimate Team are still lagging behind. And that shouldn't be that way either. It's at least one baby steps in all across the board.
Yeah, it's frustrating because, and I'll comment back on that too. And this is where the whole nobody plays that comes in. Is I'll comment and I say, well, they need to do this, and they need to also do this, and they need to market the game, and they need to, you know, do this to make the game more well received and more well rounded. And the person will say, well, nobody plays those modes, so we just end up circling back to that. It's super frustrating.
It's another straw man argument. The whole nobody plays. It is the royal we. It is, you know, I don't play it. I don't have the interest in it. Not my problem, therefore not a real problem. And that is a problem with community attitudes that you see far too much of. With the online situation, I know you haven't played much of 2K Online, but with Pro-Am, it used to be, and I touched on it last week and mentioned it on many podcasts, actually, since it's made the change last year in 2K19, is that Team Pro-Am, you could play with a minimum of three players, with AI players taking either one or two, depending if you had four or five. Sorry, three or four, rather. AI players would fill in. And it may be different on the US servers, the North American servers, because in Australia, a lot of teams that we played against only had three users as well. So it was three on three with a couple of AIs taking over. Now, people say, well, and this is like, why don't you... Well, the other thing is, why don't you whatever... Why don't you, if you're not happy with my career, why don't you play player lock in my league? Well, you can, but it doesn't have the full my career experience. Why don't you, if you want
to... I want to play my career.
Exactly. If you want to play, if you've only got three users, why not play 3-on-3 in the playground? Well, I don't necessarily want the playground style of basketball. I want to play the Pro-Am style with real rules, 5-minute quarters, etc. And more to the point, I want to play the experience that was available to me in the previous game, and now it's not. Now it's behind gatekeeping. Now it's behind this elitist idea that the home version of Pro-Am must be the super serious home version of the NBA 2K League. That's what Pro-Am needs to be now. I see the arguments for that, and I see people who want to have that preference, and it comes down to people wanting their preference, and almost delighting in other people not getting their preference catered to as well, which is ridiculous when you consider there are ways with matchmaking options and everything that everybody could be able to play that mode the way they want. You know, and it could cater to multiple people, but if you're being catered to and somebody else isn't, you can look at them smugly and go, "Ha ha, you lame casual. You know, this is only for, you know, the elite players and etc." And when you have a really fun online mode, as 2K's online modes are, they should be welcoming and accessible to everybody. But yet they are going down that elitist road, and this is something that was pointed out in a Reddit thread that I've brought up so many times. That was made by someone who used to work in the industry, talking about the MMOification of NBA 2K and how they're catering to the elite players and everything, and at the expense and even being disdainful to a big portion of the user base. And it goes back to, you know, what gamers want, being respected, to have these great experiences, to, you know, everything that we've been talking about, to have these great experiences, to create memories, to be respected, to be listened to be catered to, not to the exclusion of everybody else, but just being able to be given, you know, a experience that they enjoy and one that they enjoyed in a previous game. And to take that away, it just seems so anti-consumer, so anti-user base, again, of people who've been very supportive of the game. And why wouldn't you want these people playing and enjoying these modes? Because you can have it, that you can separate the casual and really hyper-competitive scene very easily with matchmaking. You can do it, but instead of doing that, they're focusing on autumn, or if you prefer, fall, decorations in the neighborhood and things like that that really aren't as important as the core experience. And that's what do gamers want? Focus to give these experiences, have these positive experiences with the game, and to focus on that core experience rather than bells and whistles that, at the end of the day, don't make the experience.
Yeah, and, you know, to touch on the whole, don't play my career, go play something else. It's that goes back to what we talked about on the last podcast, where it was, don't like 2K, go play live.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's the exact same mindset, and it's incredibly toxic, and it has no place in the gaming discussion. And that is another thing that I fight with constantly on social media and on forums and whatnot. But as far as the MMOification of, you know, 2K and the elitist attitude, first off, the majority of people don't want the MMO or RPG type stuff in their basketball game. That's the way I look at it. I don't think that a lot of people want RPG type elements in their game. You know how, like, when they started with the My Career, where you were walking around and you had to, you know, you were almost like leveling up, like it was an RPG, and you had to go lift weights and all of that
still,
stuff.
Still have to for boosts.
It's
yeah.
There.
Yeah.
And I think the majority of people don't care for that. But maybe I'm too disconnected from that mode to see if they do or not. But, you know,
there are people definitely that rail against it, but then there's the people that come out and defend it and say, oh, well, you just don't want to put in the hard grind, or, you know, go play something else, or just go play My League, play a lot or something. So it's,
you can't handle it, play something else.
I mean, again, a valid criticism, and not just something that one lone person is saying. Look, if I remember somebody coming in the forum and said, they need to replace the trophy in My League with a cup. I don't like the design of that. And like, well, take that up with the NBA, because this is an NBA game. And, you know, that's one person making a suggestion, which they're entitled to say, but it's an unpopular suggestion, because they want something that's not true to life in a mode that is meant to represent the real NBA. So anyone can have that, but it's not just one person saying that this is a dumb idea about the lifting weights and everything. But it goes back to something that we said last week again, that the people will defend anything. I said that in the Friday Five as well, that I reckon that if it cost you 1,000 VC, I'm just going to quote myself from the article, if it cost 1,000 VC to get past the main menu into the modes, you know that somebody, at least one person, would say, well, you know, you can just make sure you've always got a balance of 1,000 VC, and you can earn it in-game, and it's up to you to manage your VC, and, you know, you don't want to manage your VC, that's part of the game, you know, stop complaining, quit whining, like, as if it would have been a reasonable thing to expect people to do, but there will, someone will defend it. Because they want to be right. They want to be right. They want to look down. You know, they want to look down on somebody else for their preferences, the way they like to play the game, the modes they prefer, and to be able to say, "Well, you're not being catered to, but I am. I am more important than you." It is a very toxic attitude that we need to get over. But that's fighting against human nature and gaming culture, and that's tough. And I said that in the article. I'm not under the delusion that I can just put out that article and change the culture, but I think we do need to have that culture shift, because there's no reason that we should want, that anybody should want other people to suffer. I use suffer in the case of, you know, kind of in a hyperbolic way to say, you know, people do not enjoy themselves with the game, shall we say. That's less controversial. That you shouldn't want other people to not have a good time with the game as well. I mean, it'd be one thing if they're saying the same thing to you, just saying, okay, well, your preferences don't matter, only mine do, then it's just toxicity going back and forth. But if they're saying, hey, let's find a way to have everyone enjoy this game, and you're saying, no, only I should enjoy the game because, you know, this makes me elite and whatever, and, get, you know, piss off casual. No, you know, it shouldn't be like that, and it is.
I hate to say it, but it's almost become cool to be a dink.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it has been. It definitely is.
I mean, be toxic, making outrageous hot takes. In general, it's become the cool thing. And it's not just kids either. It's adults. It's adults as well. And it's really frustrating. And like you said, the fact that, let's put it this way, your concern about my career is a valid concern for you and probably many others if you explain it properly, right?
Yes.
So and we talked about that, the importance of giving detailed and good feedback. If you just go out there and you say, my career sucks, or why did you guys make my career suck, and you leave it at that, you're not helping yourself. It's a concern. Obviously there's something wrong because you're making that statement, but you're not helping yourself or anybody else who cares about that mode and in the where it's gone downhill if you're not giving that detailed feedback. So telling somebody who has legitimate gripes about my career and who can explain it properly to just go play something else or go play another mode, or if you don't like it, go play live, that is incredibly toxic.
So shut up and virtually dribble is basically what they're saying.
Yes. Yeah, shut up and virtually dribble. Yeah. Yeah, but, that's basically it. But, you know, you're talking about immersion, though, and we were talking about like what gamers want, and I wanted to touch on this because it hit me again, and I keep bringing this up, and I keep putting the exclamation point on it, is people want NBA action. They want NBA action. They want to, you know, take Durant on the perimeter and dribble like Durant and go to the hoop at the speed of Durant, of his capabilities, and throw it down on somebody like Durant. They want to be able to use Ricky Rubio and him feel different than Mike Conley. You know, they want fast-paced, fun, exciting NBA action. And honestly, I have to be completely honest with you, that's, I think, my biggest frustration with the most recent renditions of, you know, basketball, the most recent editions of basketball games, you know, of NBA 2K20, NBA Live 19. 2K20 a little bit better than 2K19 and 2K18, but they're missing that action, that fun pick up and play NBA action, and with an exclamation point. And I think, you know, go back on that, I definitely think that is a huge piece of what gamers want.
I think it comes back to that more narrow focus on maybe what is most popular, which is these days Pro-Am and Playground. Admittedly, they are very popular, those modes. But not everybody, not the whole user base are playing those modes, and there's even debate in between those two factions as to which is superior and preferable, you know, and we can talk demographics and whatever, but at the same point is people are playing the modes, nobody's playing them, I think you'll find that they are, but focusing on on those modes, and certainly focusing on a mode that is not NBA-oriented. And NBA Live 19 had the same problem, where it's focusing on the streets and the live events, which are fun and I think definitely absolutely should be part of the game. But if the most, if the element of the game, the aspect of the game that's getting the most attention and updates and new content through the year, are the events where you're having short games where you're winning clothes for your player, that's not a deep enough experience. You can have that, but you need to have more than that, because gamers want more than that.
No, and, you know, I want to bring up a point, too, because you talked about online. You know, it's not just NBA action with an exclamation point. It's basketball action with an exclamation point. It's being able to, because even if you're creating a build, what do people create builds for? Most of the time, they're trying to mimic an NBA player, right?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of metagaming now. There's a lot of people just finding the best build, regardless of whether that's like themselves or like an NBA player. It's just like, you know, yeah. It's become about the metagaming more so than basketball.
Yeah, which that's a whole nother thing. But even with that, when they're actually on the court, what they want to experience is, you know, fluid, realistic basketball action where they can mimic, you know, what's in their head as the NBA or their favorite NBA player or a player they admire. Or they want to be able to play the way they play in real life. And they want to be able to do explosive moves and be able to throw the defense off and you know, execute, you know, a sweet spin move into a layup that looks awesome and whatnot. I think it still boils down to basketball and NBA action is what people really want. And they want to be able to have fun with the game without all of the quote-unquote cheese and exploits.
The cheese, the exploits, the metagaming, the focusing on aspects that aren't basketball-related, I think is a turnoff. And not just to quote-unquote old heads like ourselves, you know, boomer gamers, whatever, you know, whatever kind of derivative name you want to give us. And certainly, I think, you know, times change, you know, games change, and what people are interested in change, and maybe some of our preferences are not cutting-edge or whatever. But again, that doesn't mean you can't cater to them. And one thing that just came to mind is that we want new things from games. We want new aspects and improvements, obviously, but new content added to games. But we also want the familiar as well, because I'm thinking about writing an article about it. I just have to kind of find the right examples and really put it into words how I want to express it. But the idea is basically, it feels like every game has at least one thing that's a bit off. Like a game could be really improved in a lot of areas, but there's something they've changed that you think, oh, they shouldn't have changed that, or I like that better the way it was before. It's very rare to get a game that hasn't made at least one, I'd say, misstep or change that's a change for change's sake. So we want the new, but we also want the familiar. We want the right things to stay, but the wrong things to change, perhaps, would be a way of putting it.
For a perfect example of that, and I'm actually really glad you brought that up, because I was thinking about this the other day, and I actually commented on it, I believe, on Operation Sports. NBA 2K16 defense functionality on ball and in transition and just defense in general, I would give anything to throw that into 2K17. So basically what happened was they created the brick wall defense in 2K17, which is pretty unrealistic in itself. And 2K16 basically had the perfect balance on defense, but the offense itself was a little bit sluggish. So basically what NBA 2K17 did was they improved the offense and went backwards on the defense. So like you say, the new edition of the game is like, no, we want you to keep that defense from 2K16. There was nothing wrong with that defense. Why did we go backwards? And that's frustrating as a gamer, because I made a post on that on NLSC. I created a thread, and I did the same on Operation Sports, that said, you know, build your perfect basketball game. And I listed the criteria, you know, for offense, defense, etc. And that was one of the points I put out, is I wish I could take the defense from 2K16 and, you know, put it with 2K17's offense. And that would be an amazing game for me.
And that's a topic I love to circle back to when we've got the whole show to talk about it, because obviously we've been talking for a while about this fascinating topic already. But to Frankenstein a game together, for lack of a better term, with all the best points of those games, and you could just make this incredible basketball game. But there's just something, whether it's a missing feature from a mode, something that was in maybe association of my league that's not there anymore, or a previous franchise game, or even something like multi-team control from the early franchise modes in NBA Live that's been missing since they rebranded into Dynasty in Live 2004. You know, just little things like that, and the little features that go missing, or playoffs mode completely in NBA Live as well. Just being able to get these features, and it feels like sometimes that it has that step forward in a lot of things, and all these things. Oh, they added all this stuff, and then they've taken that out, or that's different, or that's not quite how I would have liked that, or they didn't need to change that. And that's frustrating, because you never kind of have that perfect, you know, what could you ever have a perfect experience? Nothing left is perfect, whatever. But it's never quite complete, funnily enough, because there's something that's been changed, and maybe there's the pressure to change. I mean, I remember an interview with Ed Boon, the creator of Mortal Kombat, who talked about, and this was kind of the early 2000s when they were going through Mortal Kombat Deception and Deadly Alliance and Armageddon, and he was talking about how some of the bonus games and different things in each year were different because, you want something new. You want it not just to be able to sell, but gamers tend to want something new. And we even saw that with NBA 2K20, where people didn't like the fact that the playground was basically the same, or rather that the neighborhood was still the same. And, of course, then we had Ronnie saying, oh, that's not the neighborhood. If you think it is, you can think what you like. And then it turned out that people were quite right to think that, actually. Thank you, Ronnie. go back to that again. But people do want the new stuff. But then if it's not quite what they want, or if they lose out on something that they liked, if the new stuff comes at the expense of the old content or features that we liked, then, yeah, we're not kind of... It's almost like the monkey paw, be careful what you wish for kind of thing, where you... it's like, okay, you get the new thing, but you know that old thing you liked? That's gone. So it's kind of that situation, and it's... And so it does bring up that topic that you raised, and I would love to revisit it in detail in a future show. You know, Frankenstein your perfect basketball game, because you can grab all those features from previous games and put together something really amazing. And not that we don't haven't had some amazing releases, but how much better would they be if they hadn't overlooked this or hadn't changed that?
Yeah, exactly. And I think one of the things too is Live lost a lot of consumers and a lot of consumer faith by removing those items that were popular between NBA Live 2000 and 2004 and 2005 and whatnot. So it definitely hurt them, in my opinion. And, you know, it's funny. I was thinking back to, you know, the greatest games in NBA 2K12, and then also the Jordan Challenge in 2K11.
Yep.
And I was thinking about how my team is kind of soaked up stuff like that. If you really like
the retro historical content. Yeah, it has. Yeah.
And I think big picture, you know, while my team is cool, and like I said, I think it's an important mode, I do find it a little sad that we don't have those like gimmick features in the different games. Yeah. Because I really love the NBA 2K12 greatest game mode. And then, you know, the Jordan Challenge.
You know, we brought up the idea of going back to games and thinking something, realizing something was better than we thought it was at the time. I remember being very negative about LeBron Path to Greatness in NBA 2K14, the PC version. And look, I'll admit that I'm not the biggest fan of LeBron. I am not saying that he's a terrible player, because that would be asinine to say that. But he is an all-time great in his own right. Where he ranks is a debate for another time. I think you and I probably have similar thoughts on it anyway. So it would be a lot of agreement, probably. But in any event, I saw that mode and I thought, oh, you know, that's a bit whatever. But I went back to it and had a look at it for a Way Back Wednesday, and I thought, you know what, this was actually a very creative idea. The fact that it kind of predicted the future of him moving on was also kind of eerie as well. WWE 2K14 also predicted the end of the Undertaker's undefeated streak at WrestleMania. That was a good year for 2K.
That happens.
That was a good year for 2K predictions, I tell you. But looking at that mode, like, this is, you know, it's not necessarily appealing to me because I'm not a big LeBron fan, and whatever, but I could see the merit in it, and I'm actually thinking at some point I probably will go back and maybe play a bit of that and play through it, because there is some interesting stuff with the story. That was very creative, and we don't that creativity has probably moved more to some of the challenges in my team, as you say. Also, the stories in my career as well. That's where the creativity has gone with mixed results. I'll take my usual shot at beef fresh here, but yeah, that has been the shift in the creativity. And it is a shame that we had lost some of those modes. And I wrote a Monday Tip-Off article, I think it was, where I said why we won't get another retro mode. And I think part of it is, that shift in demographics and everything, and people maybe not having respect for the players in the past. When the Jordan Challenge in NBA's Greatest came out, I think that was maybe the perfect storm of people around about our age hitting that really nostalgic, look back at the players we grew up with. Most of them had been out of the league for at least 10 years or so by that point. So it was a great throwback. It was finally getting them into the game. It was a big challenge mode. And a lot of the people who were in the core demographic around our age at that time were really into those modes. Whereas now it would kind of be like, well, you'd probably have to do that with Kobe now and Duncan maybe and McGrady. You'd have to have that next generation of stars if you wanted to have next gen NBA's greatest or the Kobe challenge or whatever. You'd have to do it that way or a look back at LeBron's career. Or you'd have to do that rather than maybe the players we grew up with, because the now core demographic is younger, and so their nostalgia and their preferences and who they hold in high esteem are very different.
Yeah, in the path to greatness mode thing that you brought up, that's exactly what I was talking about earlier. At the time, you were like, I don't really want to touch this. But when you look back at some of the design and the gameplay and some of the modes and whatnot of some of the older games, like I said, when I recently went back to Live 15, you definitely grow, more fond. You appreciate it more. Like I appreciate Live 15 more now than I did when it was first released by quite a bit, actually.
Well,
Go ahead.
would it be fair to say that when a new game comes out, we look at it with a critical eye because we have all these expectations. Once it's in the past, we can go back and perhaps evaluate it a little bit more of a little bit more neutrally, perhaps?
Yeah, and I would say too that frustration also comes with anger. And I think sometimes what happens
Yes.
is we're so when a title is like me with 2K18 was the big one that really bothered me. When it and, but I still don't go back though and appreciate the game, I'll be honest with you. 2K18 is that's in the rearview mirror. I don't put that one on to mess around anymore.
Sorry, just to interject there. I played one game because I do have an article coming up about revisiting an issue I had with 2K18, and I played it and was reminded why I stopped playing it, actually, very early on in the piece. So.
Exactly. But that's a good example, though, of, as you saw my critiques of that, my impressions, which were pretty detailed at the time, where when the game was released, I was so frustrated at how backwards they went. And this also goes back to the whole going backwards thing, how backwards they went in so many different gameplay elements that were in 2K17, 2K16, 2K15, and even 2K14 that, I made it known. And it really bothered me at the time. And does it bother me as much now? No, because it's been a while. But 2K18 is the exception because I don't go back and appreciate it.
Some you can't. Some you
But
can't.
in
Some
most,
you just can't.
yeah, right, exactly. Some you just can't. But like a good example would be 2K16, which I was pretty critical of, and that didn't really get good in my eyes until patch 5, or at least playable until patch 5 during the game cycle. But I went back and played it recently, and I messed with the sliders. The other thing too is, and not to go off on a tangent, is we evolve as gamers too. So,
Oh yeah.
our needs, wants, and our gameplay ability changes over time. And for me, what happened was with 2K16 is I went back and played it, and I messed with sliders that I had never messed with before on the game. And I
Ah.
started playing it, and I'm like, hey, wait, this is way better than I remembered. And so I started playing, and my brother and I were like talking about it, and we're going to start a My League on it using classic teams. And it's another example of not only me evolving as a gamer, which we all evolve as gamers over time, but me going back and appreciating a game that maybe I was super frustrated at when it first came out. And like you said, it's because of the expectations where I was let down when I first picked it up.
You know, I had a similar experience, funnily enough, with NBA 2K11 and NBA 2K12, because I didn't really enjoy them the first time around, which is a very blasphemous thing to say in basketball gaming circles. For me, I had a long history with NBA Live, and 2K11, 2K12 still had the old isomotion controls where it's hold the button down and move the left stick to do the dribbling moves, which I was the right stick dribbling, which I'd become very used to with NBA Live and really liked. And I think it's the proof is in the pudding because NBA 2K has also adopted that system now, their own version of it. I mean, I think enough said that has been the way to evolve that those dribbling controls. But I've gone back having played more of 2K, and even though they don't have the right stick dribbling in 2K11 and 2K12, having really gotten into 2K13 and gotten used to 2K's feel and its whole style and the gameplay that was of that generation, I'm able to go back to 2K11. That's why I'm doing the current roster for 2K11 and maybe a couple other projects as well. Teaser. Being able to go back with it, being more used to 2K and more open to the brand and more fond of the brand than I was when I was still making that transition from Live, I really appreciate 2K11 and 2K12 more. And I guess that is perhaps part of my evolution as a gamer. And it's funny that you can appreciate that more with fresher eyes and less expectations and again, that evolution.
Yeah, and what's funny is, what first thing I want to bring up is how amazing was it that they were able to implement right stick dribbling so well in 2K13 as their first try at it?
Oh, it was it was perfect. Well, I won't say perfect, but it was as good as it can be for a first attempt. Even when Live did dribbling, right stick dribbling in 2003, when they did the first incarnation of freestyle control, is very impressive, but it's very overpowered as well. So, you know, the balance, the balance isn't quite there. So, yeah, the 2K was able to make that a very big switch to their controls and do that. I mean, for a while there, I think I brought it up last week, but the way the controls were changing a lot in games for a while there, and maybe that's something else the gamers want is consistency. Consistency through patches, consistency from year to year. You know, it's a shame when you have one release that feels so great and the next year comes out and it feels so disappointing. You remember NBA Live 07 had three different shooting buttons, jump shots, layups, and dunks. And at the time, that seemed like a decent idea, but I go back to that and it feels like a lot of overkill.
Yeah.
For some reason, three passing buttons works much better than three shooting buttons, oddly enough.
I enjoyed Live 2003 over Live 2004 for the sheer fact that there isn't a separate button for dunking and the shooting.
Right, yeah.
Yep, no, but I agree with you. I think sorry for interrupting you there, I think one of the things is, I went back and I was playing, so I have all the PC versions of 2K now because I finally got 2K9 to work. Going back to 2K9, and I have the 91-92 mod installed for 2K11, and I have the UBR, one of the greatest mods of all time, for 2K12. And I was going back and playing, and I was using the, the holding down the left bumper and doing the dribbling and stuff. That still has its moments, and I got to be honest with you, it's almost more fluid at times than you going back and forth with the right stick. Obviously, there's more control with the right stick, but you get some pretty jaw-dropping moments with the old dribbling system with 2K.
Well, once you're used to it, I think it works. It does work quite well, and it, for me, was the problem coming from Live to that. It was a very, very harsh, very stark change to do that, and goes back to what we said about expectations, that I expected to be able to pick up that game and enjoy it as I did Live with a very different control scheme, and it took me getting used to it to really be able to enjoy future games and to go back and appreciate past games as well. And there's actually a very funny bit, because I know you don't play My Career that much, but in NBA 2K19's My Career story, they go to an arcade, and there's a fictional arcade version of NBA 2K8, and you get to play this version, and they, even though it's basically using the 2008 Rockets and Celtics on a screen that's got filters to make it look old and everything, make it look last gen. And the controls, they've actually imitated the controls of 2K8. Like, if you push the right stick, it won't dribble. It'll just take a shot because it's only a shot stick like it was back then. Yeah, and it was kind of funny to play that as well. That was a really nice feature, a little touch in the 2K19 story.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think they had something, I know this is going to make me sound incredibly old, but I think they had something like that in Contra Legacy of War. It was like a Super NES game where there was like an arcade feature of it where you'd walk up to an arcade machine and you'd go to the machine and then it would be like the original Contra.
Yep.
And you'd be able to play it. And it's always cool. Those are always cool little features in games and stuff where they actually pay homage and to past titles. I've always thought that it would be a cool idea for one of the games, and maybe Live could do this or should think about it with like Live 21, is, and I almost want to say they did this once in the past. I can't remember, but include like a past version of the game, like maybe here, you know, play the, you know, 16-bit NBA Live 96, you know, and they include that with the release.
06, the North American release of NBA Live 06 had NBA Live 95 embedded as a bonus. They had to remove all the player names because even the ones that were still in the league, like Shaq, they just changed all the names for legal reasons because many of them weren't under the licensing agreement anymore, obviously, but
good point.
But the game was still there. You know, like it was still basically the players were now all fictional, which was kind of a problem, or you know, didn't appeal to the nostalgia as much. Obviously, maybe they could do it differently now with 2K with all the players that they've licensed. I don't know, but in any event, the rest of it was basically a properly emulated version of the Sega version of NBA Live 95, and it was kind of cool to see it as a throwback, kind of like the 10-year anniversary or whatever. But even something like having Classic Cam, as we said, NHL, when they had the Classic Camera and the Classic Controls that one year, you know, the throwback to NHL 94, I think they did, or one of the years. And you can see that in a lot of other games, too. Donkey Kong 64, you could go into the factory and play the old Donkey Kong arcade game. In fact, that was one of the puzzles. You know, you had to beat that to progress in the game, I believe. Not sure how you played many of the LucasArts or Sierra Adventure games back in the day, but Day of the Tentacle, you could go and up to a computer and play Maniac Mansion, the game that it's a sequel to. You could play that embedded in the new game. So it's definitely something that's there's a history of that in games. Like nostalgia for games, even the ones that have been released not that long ago, it's been a part of games for a long time. So it's not actually that something that new to have their throwbacks in gaming. So there's no reason not to do it.
Yeah, and you know what the other thing I was just thinking of when you brought up licensing is, be kind of cool if a company, you know, created the, as to say they did Live 21, but they also dusted off the old technology and put it in 16-bit form and made like with now rosters and made it look like NBA Live 96. So they wouldn't have to worry about licensing at that point because they're using the now league and the now license. But I think that would be kind of cool to, you know, people create mods for that. Didn't somebody, I don't know if it was you or somebody else recently, that created a updated mod for 17, 18 or 18, 19 for NBA Live 96. So
I haven't created the, no, oh, actually, yes. It wasn't me. It was the Hardwood Classics for the Sega version of NBA Live 96. As 2020 rosters. I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank on the username, but you can look at that in our download section and get that. It's there's something about that. It's putting new faces in old places, kind of thing. It's the same as being able to play with old players in new games, you know, and do things that you never could in the old games. You know, getting there's a novelty to it, I think.
Okay, boomer.
Yeah, apparently so. Yeah.
Well, we sound like boomers right now.
Very well timed, but no, it's interesting. It's great, and it's why I think a game like, you know, Basketball Classics, which you brought up, and I've had Josh and Dave on the podcast before, and that was recently updated. And I know they're steaming, you know, full steam ahead to version 1.0 to get out of early access, and that's been really cool to see the development of that game. You know, that was a game that I never thought that I never knew I needed Basketball Classics until I actually played it. And shout out to Razer, now of course a member of the 2K development team, doing great work on the faces there for 2K20. You know, Basketball Classics, it has a lot of the modern design concepts, but it's got that old school aesthetic and style of gameplay. You know, it's not trying to compete with Live and 2K. It's not trying to be this ultra sim you know, AAA game. It's an indie game that's replicating a very nostalgic experience of the early days of basketball gaming, but it's already way better than a Double Dribble or a lot of those other games. You know, it's very impressive, and I know you've been talking about getting it, and I would definitely recommend it, especially since the NLSC team is unlockable in that game. I am a video game character at last. So shout out to 10-year-old me somewhere on some celestial plane. You know, we made it, buddy. I would definitely recommend it because it is such a great fusion of that old school mentality and old school gameplay with new techniques, like proper jump shot mechanics with a shot meter and proper ratings and everything that things like Double Dribble didn't have. So there is that market for it, as niche as it may be, and we are seeing the way those concepts come together.
Imagine how 10-year-old you would have reacted to being in an official video game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously, I've put myself in games. I've scanned my face for NBA Live. It's never really come out for 2K, but it has for Live. And that's cool to see your face in the game like that. But to be officially in the game, to somebody else put it in, that's what's special.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and shout out to Josh and Dave, because I floated the idea where after the podcast I was... if you're listening, guys, you know, we were talking after the show and talking about the game and throwing out some suggestions, etc. And I said, I kind of put it jokingly in case, you know, because you never want to get rejected. So you're kind of floating it as half joking, half serious. You know, say, hey, I can send along the NLS. If you're looking for bonus teams, I'll send along the NLSC logo and, you know, could put our squad in the game if you're interested in that. And to their credit, Josh and Dave were like, that would be a great idea. Let's do it. You know, send us along. And I did it. They did it. And there I am, you know. I made it, Mom.
I have such an appreciation for what they did. I'm actually going to go pick it up probably when we get off this podcast. I'll probably buy it because I haven't bought it yet, and I've been meaning to. I have such an appreciation for the amount of work that they put into that title and doing it in 2019 in such a niche gaming space. We talked about this before the call. Creating that game with those visuals and whatnot, and you know, to make it look like, again, like a game, you know, going back to like NES, you know, the 8-bit generation, to make that game in 2019 and put that much effort into it, to make it really good and in a very niche market where it's not updated graphics and it's not not something that the majority of people are going to buy. It's not licensed, and just all the effort and the promotion and what they did is truly remarkable, and I really appreciate, you know, them going out of their way to work on a project and create a game that they were truly passionate about. Because if you really think about it, making a game like that now, you have to be passionate about it. You have to want to do it, and you have to love what you're doing. And I just have such an appreciation for what they did. So if they are listening, I approve, and I think that you guys did a hell of a job.
It's definitely a labor of love, as we've talked about with modding old games. You know, sometimes you know that you're not going to have the biggest audience, and it's not about necessarily the audience. It's about having the biggest audience or microtransactions or things like that that are... And I'm not going to rail against AAA gaming completely, because obviously I play a lot of AAA games, and I think they do great work. But if we see some trends in AAA gaming, and then you see indie games come along. I actually ended up buying Untitled Goose Game. I joked about it last week, but I've been meaning to pick it up, and I did. And just playing it and having that experience, just a video game experience, a gaming experience, and creating those memories, and, you know, having so much fun. You know, that was not on the virtual hardware. That was in a lovely English town where I was a horrible goose, but it comes down to having that kind of fun experience, and that's what gamers want. It's what basketball gamers want. We want fun. We want some nostalgia. We want consistency. We want to be respected. We want to be listened to. You know, we want to be catered to. And those of us who have got the right attitude, we want, you know, our fellow gamers to get what they want as well. And I think that's the best way of approaching it. You know, sometimes we want too much. You know, we want a perfect game and for it to be absolutely perfect, and that's very hard to do, and it's not always easy to get everything in one development cycle. But honestly, when it comes down to it, we want all these things that will, as you said at the top of the show, and, you know, for all the things we've said since, and it's been a great discussion, you know, making memories and having those positive experiences with games, at the end of the day, D, that's what we want. And I think that's, you know, that's what's so great about our hobby, is that we can have those experiences when it all does line up.
Yep, absolutely. And I think one more point I wanted to touch on with that is, I think one of the biggest things, and we've talked about this and we've seen these comments over and over and over again, is people head scratching, saying, how can I see this and they can't? I know you've seen that a lot, you know, where somebody will say, how could they allow this to get past production? And how can, how could they possibly not include this basketball gameplay mechanic when it's there in real life and they should know that? So I think, like you say, when issues present themselves, you know, and new issues come up, a lot of times it creates a frustration because, you know, everybody's an expert, right?
Oh, yeah.
So we've talked about this. Everybody's an expert, and including me and you, we're experts as well. But
infallible, even.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And the thing is that we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but they know that we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, and that we're going to take the product at face value. So, you know, that's going to be that. I'm sure they're prepared for that on release, but that's another reason why people get frustrated, is the, hey, how can you guys possibly get this in the video game when I can recognize that it's an issue? How did this make it past production?
For sure.
Yeah.
And you know, if there's one point that I'd like to make, we've talked about what gamers want. You know what gamers don't want? And I'll make one more shot for this week. Be fresh. That's what gamers do not want. But
don't put boomer. Don't put that type of commentary in the game. Like, don't. I said okay, boomer, earlier as a joke, but you know what? If anybody's listening, don't put that in any like my career or like my league tweets or anything like that. I don't want to see that anywhere. That boomer stuff just drives me.
They put LeVar Ball in 2K18, so I don't know. We could be seeing okay, boomer sooner than we think. Boomer sooner. Shout out to Jim Ross and everyone else from Oklahoma there. It's very fun to talk about, obviously, with you, and thank you for joining us once again. That pretty much puts a bow on that discussion, at least for us for now. But, you know, tell us what you want. What do you think basketball gamers want? Do you agree with us? You know, who do you agree with? Which side do you fall on? You know, let's have the discussion. Take it to the forum. Take it to the comments section here on the NLSC, of course, and hit us up on social media. Speaking of social media, of course, you know, as you said, Dee, you're on other podcasts, member of the NBA Live Veterans Committee and all the great fellas over there. Shout out to Rock. Shout out to Prime. Shout out to Swaggy. All of you guys, you know, doing great work, keeping up the, you know, the live standard, truth is standard, hashtag, and all that stuff. So where can we find you once again, Dee, and everything else you do with the guys at NLVC?
Absolutely. So over on the NLVC, and again, shout out to that team over there. You guys you're great to work with, and you do a great job. I'm on the NLSC as D for Free. You can reach me on YouTube at D for Free as well, with the D Brown no look dunk picture as my profile picture. You can also reach me on Twitter at D for 384. Again, D Brown no look as the main picture. And I'd love to talk with you guys, talk about basketball gaming and talk about basketball in general. So definitely reach out to me. And I'm also on Operation Sports as Retro D for 3, because D for 3 was taken. And Andrew, thank you again for having me on.
Hey, great to have you, man. And as for the NLSC, of course, you can follow us on Twitter at the NLSC. We're also the NLSC on Facebook. On Instagram, we are NLSC Basketball. On YouTube, we are NBA Live Series Center. Me personally, I am, of course, Andrew in the forum, Andrew NLSC. Got to represent the branding on Twitter. As for the podcast, we really hope you enjoy tuning in and listening to this fun discussion we had. Another fun discussion this week. If you do, we encourage you to subscribe to the show on various platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. Search for NLSC Podcast, look for our logo, and that will be us. Or keep streaming on the NLSC itself. As long as you're tuning in and enjoying the show, that is the main thing. But we do appreciate any positive reviews that we get on those digital platforms as well. And of course, keep it locked to the NLSC itself, nba-live.com, for everything we do for basketball video games. But yes, that has brought us to the end of episode number 299 of the NLSC podcast. Thank you once again for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Derek.
Go get buckets, everyone.